Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Talk That Talk with Tweety and LJ. On Tweety. LJ should be with us shortly. He's on the line.
Happy Friday. I am LJ.
LJ is here. He's there. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Happy Father's Day, LJ. LJ, you there?
I can barely hear you. Just going in and out, but yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, I say happy Father's Day.
Appreciate you. Hey, while we're on the topic of Father's Day, I want to wish all the fathers out there that's holding it down Father's Day. And tell all you baby mamas out there, today ain't the damn day for you to get on these social network sites. Enjoy shitting on your baby daddy. If you got a scrub ass baby daddy, that's your fault. Don't be out here taking my day. So you can shoot slugs at your baby daddy because you don't think he were ever caught. You say that shit from us today. My bad, bro. I was on a little soapbox, but you know, I hate they be trying to marginalize Father's Day. You know what I'm saying? But that ain't, you know, that ain't the topic of conversation. That's for another day.
Yeah, I'm with you. Hey, you're a father, so you can speak on that. I can't. Don't be quiet. Let me ask you a question, man. If we can get right into the show, get right into it. NBA Finals. The series ended in six, like a lot of people predicted. LeBron James had, for what everybody would say is an amazing series. Some people even thought he was MVP worthy. But he lost, so I don't think he should have been MVP. Shouldn't even be in consideration. But how do you feel about this aftermath? The reaction of it's all the coach's fault.
You said the aftermath about what happened in the final?
Yeah, like how he blaming everything on David Blatt.
I mean, I think to me that's lame. I mean, you know, like, there's a lot of, I want to say the majority of LeBron fans, and even a lot of the media, they try to give LeBron credit for everything when everything going good. You know what I'm saying? When they won game two in Oakland, and, you know, basically took a home court series away, I mean, home court advantage away from the Warriors. It was like, oh, LeBron is LeBron that. You know, I said, excuse me. Then they won game two. LeBron the hero. LeBron is LeBron that. You know what I'm saying? Well, no questions about David Blatt's strategy or none of that. But then as soon as they lose, now David Blatt don't know what he's doing. He's playing the people too many minutes. I think it's lame. I mean, you got to give that guy some credit. He did enough to get them to the NBA Finals. I mean, at one point, they had a losing record. And I think they were number five or number six or something like that in the Eastern Conference. So I think David Blatt deserved a lot of credit. And the other thing is, too, to me is that a lot of this season, especially I don't want to blame his fans. I'm going to blame the media for this. You hear a lot of people in the media. I watch a lot of talk shows on TV related to sports and listen to a lot of podcasts and sports radio. You hear a lot of people throughout the season saying, oh, LeBron's a GM. LeBron wanted Shumpert and Smith, so they got Shumpert and Smith. LeBron wanted Miles Gow, so they got Miles Gow. Then, you know, that little dust up about LeBron's calling timeouts. He's calling plays. He's doing this. He's doing that. Okay, so if LeBron doing all this, you want to give him all the credit. When they lose, his head got to answer. He got to answer that door too. You know what I'm saying? You can't give him credit when it's going good and saying he's the GM, he's the coach, and then as soon as they lose, he's a hero. Now the guy who's the actual coach is his fault. That's a whole move. But that's what I think about. What do you think about it?
I said that all goes back to the thing of players win, coaches lose. You have to be. It just comes with the territory. If you start playing, you win, you get all the credit. You lose, The coach didn't know how to handle you. The coach didn't know how to use your abilities. I mean, that's just the way of the game. But
that is,
I agree
with
the
stupid
aspect of
that's
it.
What we got to call like, we got to get that too. I mean, that wasn't here. I wouldn't even go so far as say Nathan. To me, they just people stupid. That's what it, I mean, that's just my opinion, though. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
I mean, you're kind of stupid. I'm kind of, which one has been that way for years, like, you know, Kobe, who did Kobe and Shaq have? Dale Harris. Kobe and Shaq.
Oh.
They had Dale Harris the year before Phil Jackson got there. Dale Harris had got a team for the NBA Finals previously. It wasn't like Dale Harris didn't know how to coach basketball. It's just that the star players didn't want to play for him. If the star, like, they say LeBron wants to keep David Blatt from what is going around. I've seen on Twitter and stuff, like, they want to keep him around so he can continue to do what he want to do. It's like LeBron is the opposite. Like, he doesn't want that coach that's going to structure everything. He wants that coach he can pretty much do what the hell he wants to with. And that's just really what it comes down to. Like I said, David Blatt will be the head coach of Cleveland next year. No doubt about it.
If he want a coach he can kick around, they need to give his ass all the blame. That's what I think. If you know what I'm saying, like, I guess it's a little bit more black and white to me. Like, if you ain't out there saying, hey, you know, I mean, I know LeBron say, you know, stuff about the coach or whatnot, but, and the media are going to say what they want to say, but you know what I'm saying, I blame it mostly on the media because, like I say, if they going to give him all the credit when it's going good, then, you know what I'm saying, you got to get the credit. I mean, you deserve the blame when it's going bad. And, I mean, you know, and if LeBron doing all this coaching and all that, he don't coach too damn well in big games considering he's 2-4 in the NBA Finals as a player. But, I don't leave it up to me to call out the obvious. You know, I just work. I just show up and work.
I really do think the media makes LeBron out to be a whole lot more than what it really is. And I ain't saying there's nothing there, but all it is, he's making all of these moves and he's doing this and he's playing coach GM. No, I don't think so. I don't think LeBron signed his own check. I don't think LeBron negotiated his own contract.
If he is, we need to buy his ass. We need to be asking him why he can unravel J.R. Smith.
Well, I mean, but I will say LeBron James, I'm pretty sure, does have say-so on, has at least an input on who the players that come in and out because he is a star player. Like, that's not unheard of. Like, you know, Jordan probably has say-so, Kobe has say-so, Tim Duncan has say-so, Dirk has say-so. That's not uncommon. So I'm like you. I mean, but it's just the fact that he is the best player in the league. So I'm saying the best player in the world because this is the best league in the world. So he's the best player in the world by default. So he's going to get his praise will be escalated. He'll get a hold of him because honestly, wait, I guess it's a whole other subject, but the appearance of got MVP in here. But
yeah, I mean, I think go ahead.
I said because he showed MVP stuff. Don't get me wrong, LeBron James had these triple doubles out the wazoo, but he shot the ball 40 times a game. If you give me 40 shots or 30 something shots, you better give me at least 25 to 28 points because otherwise, we're going to lose by 30, which they did when he only got 20 points.
And, you know,
say that again.
That was an interesting thing to me about the finals was that, and I'll be honest with you, you know, I said this a million times, a bunch of times on this podcast. I'm a Steph Curry fan. I like the Warriors. My kids love the Warriors. My middle son, I mean, my kids love the Warriors. So I watched the Warriors. And I, you know, for a minute, I was buying into the media hype that Steph Curry wasn't playing well. But if you look at the stats, Steph Curry really only had one game, and in that one bad game, he still scored 19 points. You know, so he had one bad game. I mean, I think for the series, he shot 40% or better from the three, and I think just overall field goal percentage like 47%. But, you know, people, you know, thought he played terrible. But, I mean, statistically, if you look at statistics, he still played, you know, still played pretty good except for that one game. LeBron, to me, had one really bad game. Go ahead. No, I would say LeBron had that one game to me that I thought was pretty bad where he scored, like, with the one where they got destroyed. He only scored, like, 21, 22 points. But the biggest thing is that they talk, you know, all this stuff about support from his support cast. You know, LeBron James shot 38% for the series. Two games, in two different games, he shot 31% from the field. I mean, I got it. He scored a lot of points. But to me, if you shoot 38%, for a series over six games, you shot, and of those six games, the two games, you shot 41%. I would say offensively, you're probably not playing all that well. So I know they wanted to blame everybody else, but I think one thing that you didn't hear a lot about that I think affected the outlook was people were looking at, oh my God, he scored 48 points. And it's like, yeah, you know, or 40 some odd points. It's like, yeah, but he took 35 shots. And only made 31% of it, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I can understand giving Iguodala the MVP because
you can.
It was kind of inserting him in the start. Well, I can because he kind of turned the series around for Golden State. However, see how they would say that, but, you know, it's kind of like what have you done for me lately kind of a deal. But I think if you go across the series, the one guy Golden State could count on every game, if you're looking at statistics, is Steph Curry. Klay Thompson really played good one game. Andre Iguodala played really well. I mean, he played pretty good defense the entire series. But offensively, he only played well those last three games. You know, but I don't know.
I guess my thing is if Andre Iguodala's insertion into the finals was a key component, well, then, damn, J.J. Barea should have got the finals MVP when the Mavericks won it, because when we inserted him in game three and starting lineup, we won the last three games of the series.
J.J. Barea is a scrub, sweetie. Don't be disrespectful.
That ain't disrespectful. My thing is this. He was our sixth man that year. He played the same role as Andre Iguodala does. He played the sixth man. He just played it in a different manner. He was instant offense. He came in and he did his job very well, and especially in that finals. When we inserted him into the starting lineup, his quickness became a problem, just like Andre Iguodala's defense became a problem for LeBron James. I don't think just because a coach makes a decision and it changes the series that your insertion calls for MVP status. In fact, now Steve Kerr deserves the MVP then because he put you in the starting lineup. The person who deserved the MVP in my opinion is the person who was the best player throughout the series, and that was Steph Curry.
Yeah. I can't really go against that argument too much. I just can see how somebody can say, well, you know, he did this. But, you know, the crazy thing about all this Andre Iguodala MVP thing, right, the majority of almost the entire time he was, well, defensively anyways, he was matched up against LeBron pretty much the entire time he was in the game. You know, so in order for him to have had enough of an impact defensively, you know, that means he had to have been doing well against LeBron. But, you know, you know what I'm saying? So, like, if you give Iguodala credit for his defense throughout the series, you can't turn around and necessarily, to me, you can't really turn around and say, oh, LeBron James the MVP. Because if...
Exactly.
You know...
How can you have the man that you're guarding be considered for MVP?
You can't tell me Iguodala playing great defense and LeBron shooting poorly, but then say LeBron is MVP. People be out here selling dreams left and right, and most of these people get by. Oh, I want that dream because I think this, that, and the third. That's why people get scammed all the time. That's why people can get sold a box of styrofoam. They be like, what? I didn't get a box of styrofoam.
That's stupid. But, I guess speaking of star players getting treated unfairly, we can
we can kind of switch game modes to football, which the season is, what, a little bit over 80 days away from kickoff? You know, preseason is less than 2 months away. Training camp starts in, what, about 2 or 3 weeks?
About 6 weeks, roughly.
Yeah, you got it. You got some top receivers having contract disputes with their teams. And we're talking about hometown Dez Bryant and the Broncos Demaryius Thomas. They both in a situation of play for franchise or don't show up, or hopefully you get this long-term deal that you want.
You know, I think the one that needs to get signed more than anything, and I think he is the least likely to leave, is Dez Bryant. I mean, Terrence Williams sort of, kind of came alive this past season, and had a breakout year this past year. But, I mean, the combination of Dez Bryant and the Cowboys running game drove the Cowboys this past season, So I think he is probably more important to the Cowboys than maybe Demaryius Thomas is,
to the Broncos,
because Emmanuel Sanders had a great season last year. They ran the ball pretty well, and Peyton Manning is almost like a coach on the field. Not taking away from my boy Tony Romo, Dallas.
Man, I don't think either, but I think both of them going to end up having to play under the franchise tag this year. Because both teams ain't now winning teams in the hurry to sign them to a long-term deal. Even though signing Dez Bryant to a long-term deal could actually save the Cowboys cap room for this year if they want to go get somebody.
I think both teams will eventually get it done.
Right. Maybe in the middle of the season. But because I don't think either one of them wants to be the team that sets the market for the new wave of receivers. Like, they don't. But neither one of them is getting Calvin Johnson or Larry Fitzgerald money. I think that's all seven of them doing. I hope they understand that.
You're not going to get another top-tier receiver. The other good thing about both these guys, they're both fairly young receivers. It's not like they're 30-plus years old or in their late 20s or anything like that. They're both in their mid-20s, so, they both still got, assuming they stay healthy, quite a few years of a good quality football left ahead of them. So I know the Cowboys have been pretty tight with their money. Of course, let go, what's his name? I can't think of his name now. He left the Cowboys, so I ain't remember him no more. He a bum to me now. What's the dude who played running back for the Cowboys last year?
DeMarco Murray.
Yeah, man, that dude right there. He don't go to the Eagles. That's neither here nor there. They didn't pay DeMarco Murray. And me personally, I understand why they didn't. We've had this conversation before. I don't think DeMarco Murray is a top-tier pay-wise running back. He had one great season behind an amazing offensive line, and I don't think he's going to produce like that, regardless of whether he gets the opportunities or not. I don't think he's going to produce like that in Philadelphia. So I think the Cowboys, will lean even more on Dez Bryant this season. I wouldn't be surprised if Dez Bryant goes over 100 receptions this upcoming season.
And I guess that was going to be my point. Like, what's the hesitation of signing this man to a long-term deal? I mean, maybe it could be the guaranteed money, like a lot of people say, which is probably the case. But I'm just looking at his stats for the last few years, and I'm like, when you need to lean on him, he produced 290-plus-year catches in 2012 and 2013. Both years he had over 1,200 yards receiving. And both years he had over 10 touchdowns. And even this year, when you asked him to kind of take a back seat, when you decide to get your running back almost 500 touches, he still caught 88 balls, still had over 1,300 yards, still had 16 touchdowns, and that 16 touchdowns led the league. This man is setting the standard for receivers. Why not set the standard for, I mean, I ain't saying you got to go break the bank. I don't agree with breaking the bank, but. And don't disrespect the man. Don't be scared to set the standard because, hell, he's doing it out there in the field. Don't be scared to set the market with your receiver. Like, I think Dez Bryant should get his get his money.
I think he's going to get paid. I do think that the Cowboys, hopefully it'll be the Cowboys. I'm a Cowboys fan. I do think eventually the Cowboys will pay him. I mean, I know right now they have until July 15th. I know from my understanding, Dez Bryant has said he's willing to miss games in order to in order to get a long-term deal done, which, this is my perspective on stuff like that. It's easy to say you'll miss something till you miss that first check. That's when you had that come to Jesus moment. You're like, man, if I had just signed that deal, I'd have made up $500,000 this week. You know what I'm saying? Then that's when you, to me, that's when you start seeing players say, you know what, I'm just going to come in and I'm going to play through it. They will come in and play through it. It's a bargaining tool, but I think even if he don't sign a long-term deal, I don't think Dez is going to miss any game. He's a competitive dude. He won the Cowboys to win a Super Bowl. I think he feels that the Cowboys – I mean, I hope he feels the Cowboys would do right by him as far as, you know, paying him what him and his agent think that he's worth. But when you start missing them checks, you know, your mind can change just a little bit. You see things different.
True. He ain't got that check yet.
Nah, yeah.
Go ahead.
Speaking of checks, I don't mean to switch the subject from the wide receivers. What do you think about the situation up in Seattle with Russell Wilson and his contract?
I'm starting to think they want to tell Russell Wilson, your game manager. But they don't want to. Well, I guess they are kind of breaking to him that way by not breaking the bank for him. They say because his resume is amongst the best. You got Super Bowl appearances, one Super Bowl championship. Think about it. He's only been in the league, what, 3 years? He is quarterback of the team to two Super Bowl appearances, one Super Bowl championship.
He's been a starting quarterback, but.
Some people. I agree.
This is one of the problems I have in sports. One of the issues I think you run into in sports when you start trying to determine a guy's greatness based solely on how many championships he wins. Because I'm not knocking Russell Wilson or anything like that, but I mean, has he been, like, over the top so good these last few years? You know, what's really pushed him over? You know, it's running the ball and playing defense. And I'm not knocking what Russell Wilson has done, but I think that the thing you have to, kind of like you were saying, is Russell Wilson a game manager? Or is he a guy that you can say, hey, you know what? We got to throw the ball 40 times today. You know, can he go out there and do what Tony Romo, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and so, you know, Andrew Luck, those type of guys, can he go out there and do what they do? Now, I do think the one argument that I saw on TV somewhere that Jay Cutler got like $50 million or some astronomical guaranteed amount of money. So, you know, I don't know, but I think that's the decision that Seattle has to make is, yeah, you were the starting quarterback, but, you know, it's like Sam. You remember that's a bad example. Like somebody who's the starting, like Derek Fisher.
Yeah, I'll say like Trent Dilfer. You're going to go play the same sport. Trent Dilfer won the Super Bowl with the Ravens.
I would think maybe Derek Fisher is the better, because Derek Fisher made some big shots. He made some big plays.
True.
You know, he's a good leader probably, but
he wasn't a star.
Can you win a championship without Derek Fisher? Probably so. The Lakers are still probably going to, you know, win championships without Derek Fisher. So, I don't know. That's like I'm not completely 100% sold that he's a game manager, but I'm definitely not sold that he's a guy that you hand the keys to the engine to and say, go win at this ball game on a regular basis. I don't think he hasn't proven in the NFL that he can do that. Take the ball and go win games, not just go quarterback a team, but actually go win games throwing the ball 40, 50 times on maybe not 50, but, you know, in the high 30s, 40-plus times on a regular basis. But
Right. He ain't got that. I said we got 5 minutes left, man. I wanted to ask you a question since this is Father's Day. Fathers with their kids in sports, whether it be coaching them or whatnot, or just even being a fan. I've seen some fathers able to deal with the pressure of seeing their kid compete, and I've also seen fathers that kind of try to relive their own moments through their kids and get a little bit too into it. What do you feel fathers should draw the line in watching their child or coaching their child on the field?
Man, that's a good that's a hell of a question. And it's an interesting question. I will draw from my own. For me, you know, it's hard as a father because, especially if you were a good athlete. Well, I'm going to say especially if you were a good athlete because I was a good athlete. You know, the
right.
One thing you want your kids to do to get out there and do it is be great. You know, not just be good, but be great. Especially, you know, and most of us want our kids to come out of the womb dribbling, you know, whatever sport you play or you learn, you thought you was really good at, you want your kids to come out of the womb being as good as you were last time you played, when, you know, in reality, that's not going to be the case. You know, like me, for example, I really didn't become good at basketball until I was like 8 or 9 years old. So, you know, for me to expect my kids to come out and be great at basketball is unrealistic. But I think what you have to do as a father, the most important thing, I think you have to be a supporter. You know, enjoy watching them play, enjoy being there, you know, just be there for them and try to be happy for them and encourage them. But I also think you got to be honest with them. Hey, if he's 7 years old and he out there sucking it up, you know, you don't necessarily, if you don't want to tell him he's sucking it up, you know, I personally don't believe in saying, hey, you had a good game. If you didn't have a good game, if he played hard, tell him he played hard. But don't lie to him and say he had a good game just because, you know, you think he's young and he just needs to hear that. Yeah, you know, they need to hear encouragement. But, you know, I also think you always, at least my the way I raised, and I have 3 boys, by the way, for listeners who don't know, I raised my kids to, I want them to understand that I will always be honest with them. You know, so as they get older in life, they can always come to me for an honest answer. And part of that is playing sports. You know, if you're not any good, I may not say, hey, you suck. I may find different verbiage, but, you know, I think you got to draw the line when, you know, you're out there fighting and just be, you know, going, like, way, way overboard as far as screaming at your kids and all that. I mean, after a certain age, maybe you can scream at them. I'm not going to say I've never yelled at my kids. But that's why I think you got to draw the line when you – turn them into, like, professional athletes on your – when you turn them into professional athletes, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I know you've done a lot of coaching.
Yeah, I say because I'm not a parent for the listeners, but I have coached for a few years now, and even as a coach – sometimes you have to take yourself out of that situation because a lot of coaches are parents. And me being the coach out there without kids, I have to remember that I have a role as a coach to be somewhat of a father figure. So, yeah, I'm like you. I have, like, certain, you know, you have certain coaches who just predicate themselves on the power that they have of being the coach and yelling at their kids too much, and I've caught myself yelling at kids, and it's not, like you say, it's not the fact that they need encouragement all the time, like you say, the encouragement has to be mixed in with truth, and if you, like I say, a coach has got the same relationship on their field as they have to have their kid trust them as they would trust their parent.
Speaking of kids, that's my baby boy in the background crying. the other thing that I think doesn't just go for fathers, but all parents, is mostly dads that are pretty bad about it.
Oh, happy Father's Day, people. We're out of time.
Oh, all right. See y'all next week.
Yeah.
All
right, peace.
Oh, that shit, I ain't got it in the episode. We was the loud on my radio show. Now, what would you ask?
blogtalkradio.com. Blog talk.
Yep, that's it.
Hey, Martin.
That's it. That's how we did.
And we just did 30 minutes. And that's it. But I expanded. I feel like an hour, 2 hours.
What about the whole day?
They came on the phone and the show might be like. Do a show.